A desperate mother watches her autistic son suddenly speak again after receiving a hormone during a routine medical procedure. An elderly woman leaps from her wheelchair after spinal surgery that involved nothing more than a small incision. These aren't miracles or frauds. They're glimpses into one of medicine's most profound mysteries, the mind's ability to heal the body. We've all heard about the placebo effect, usually dismissed as a nuisance in clinical trials or proof that someone's pain was all in their head. But what if we've been looking at it all wrong? What if the very thing we've been trying to eliminate from medicine holds the key to better healing? Parker Beck's story captivated millions when it aired on NBC's Dateline in 1998. After years of silent withdrawal into autism, 3-year-old Parker miraculously began speaking and engaging with the world following a dose of secretin, a gut hormone. Within weeks, the pharmaceutical supply vanished as desperate parents paid thousands on the black market. Yet, when rigorous trials tested secretin against saline injections, both groups improved by nearly 30%. The real treatment performed no better than fake medicine. This pattern repeats across modern medicine with unsettling frequency. Bonnie Anderson returned to her beloved golf after vertebroplasty surgery for her fractured spine, never knowing her procedure was fake. The surgeon made an incision but injected nothing. Sleeping pills often work no better than sugar tablets. Even major surgeries sometimes fail to outperform sham procedures. The uncomfortable truth? Much of what we credit to pills and procedures may actually come from something else entirely, our expectation of healing. Inside a Turin hospital, 74-year-old Rosanna Consoni trembles uncontrollably from Parkinson's disease. Within minutes of activating her medication pump, she sits upright, steady, and confident. But neuroscientist John Stussel discovered something extraordinary. Parkinson's patients given placebos showed dopamine levels tripling in their brains, equivalent to taking amphetamines. The belief they'd received treatment triggered their brains to produce the very chemical they lacked. High in the Italian Alps, researcher Fabrizio Benedetti gave climbers at 11,500 feet empty oxygen canisters. Their bodies responded as if breathing real air, reducing brain inflammation and blood vessel dilation. Your brain contains its own medicine cabinet. Placebos simply help you access what's already there. Though they powerfully affect how we feel, they can't increase actual blood oxygen or cure underlying diseases. Ted Kapchuk's journey from acupuncturist to Harvard professor began when patients improved before he'd even inserted needles. He recognized healing wasn't in the needles, but in the ritual, relationship, and belief surrounding treatment. This launched his research into open-label placebos, telling patients they're receiving fake pills and watching them improve anyway. Linda Buonanno laughed when offered sugar pills for her irritable bowel syndrome, yet within days, her symptoms vanished. Across multiple studies, patients' pain decreased by 30%, even knowing they took placebos. The ritual of taking medicine, the bottle, the routine, the act of self-care, carried therapeutic power independent of any active ingredient. When Reinhold Messner and Peter Hobbler summited Everest without oxygen in 1978, doctors predicted brain damage. Yet below 23,300 feet, their blood oxygen remained normal despite crushing fatigue. Hearts didn't pump at maximum. Lactic acid decreased rather than accumulated. If their bodies had oxygen and fuel, why the exhaustion? South African physiologist Tim Noakes offers a radical answer. Fatigue isn't physical failure, but protective emotion. Your brain imposes exhaustion to prevent harm, maintaining a safety margin. This explains why Olympic champion Mo Farah could do sit-ups after complete exhaustion and why Samantha Miller spent years bedridden despite normal test results. Once an energetic art teacher, she became so debilitated she asked her family to help her die. Through 5 years of gradual retraining, starting with turning over in bed once hourly, she reclaimed her life by teaching her brain that movement was safe. Strip away stage performances, and hypnosis becomes a tool for accessing unconscious bodily processes. Gastroenterologist Peter Horwell treats irritable bowel syndrome, affecting 10 to 15% worldwide, through gut-focused hypnotherapy. Patient Nicole, whose life collapsed under IBS symptoms while tests showed nothing wrong, visualizes her digestive system working like waves on a calm beach. The results? 81% of patients remain well after 5 years. Brain scans reveal hypnotized patients consciously control typically automatic functions like stomach emptying and colon contractions. Two births, one mother, radically different experiences. During her first delivery, the author faced rotating hospital midwives who seemed frustrated by complications. Despite being prepared, she spiraled into panic, requiring emergency intervention. Her second birth, though objectively more complicated, felt entirely different. With trusted midwife Jackie Tompkins providing continuous care, the author found rhythm with contractions. Feel it rise, relax, close your eyes, breathe out. Like ducking under a wave into the still water instead of struggling through the crashing surf. What would have triggered surgery instead became complication-free. The difference wasn't medical technology, it was human relationship. Terminal lung cancer patients receiving monthly palliative care sessions focused on personal matters rather than treatments reported better quality of life, less depression, and lived significantly longer, 11.6 months versus 8.9 months. The sessions involved no new treatments, just conversations about what mattered most. Whether facing birth, chronic illness, or death, the quality of our relationships with caregivers profoundly shapes physical outcomes. In Costa Rica's Nicoya Peninsula, 60-year-old men live 24.3 years longer than average, longer even than the Japanese. Their telomeres, protective chromosome caps that shorten with age, remain remarkably long. The secret? Social connection. Nicoyans who don't see family weekly or live alone lose this advantage completely. Social isolation doubles mortality risk, more dangerous than obesity or inactivity. Lonely people show increased inflammation and decreased antiviral defenses, as if their bodies prepare for solitary survival rather than communal living. At Lourdes, Rose brings her disabled children annually, finding something vital. Here, I can be Rose. I'm a person as well. Surrounded by understanding, there's a big weight on my shoulders, and by the time I get home, it is gone. Whether through family meals in Nicoya or pilgrimage to Lourdes, belonging heals at the cellular level, influencing gene expression, immune function, and lifespan itself. When Cherie Kaplan received her HIV diagnosis at 29 in the mid-1990s, before effective treatments existed, she founded the Center for Positive Connections, serving over 1,500 members. By interpreting her illness as part of a larger purpose, she maintained higher CD4 counts and lower viral loads than similar patients. Psychologist Gail Ironson confirmed this pattern. Patients who found deeper spiritual meaning after diagnosis showed better immune function, regardless of religious tradition. The key isn't religion, but having purpose beyond ourselves, through nature, family, work, or justice. Colorado meditation retreat participants with greater purpose showed higher telomerase levels, slowing cellular aging. Those finding satisfaction through meaningful activities rather than shallow pleasures showed lower inflammation-related gene expression. At Lourdes, the real miracle isn't the 69 officially recognized cures from millions of pilgrims, but how the sick are valued as whole people rather than diagnoses. Connecting to something larger than ourselves doesn't just make life worth living, it helps us live longer. For decades, we've pursued purely chemical solutions to suffering, trying to eliminate the mind from medicine. Yet evidence reveals an uncomfortable truth. Our beliefs shape our biology, our relationships rewire our genes, and our sense of purpose influences our immune systems. This doesn't mean abandoning scientific medicine. We need both pharmaceutical precision and the power of meaning. When placebos are paired with real medication first, response rates approach 100%, allowing some ADHD patients to have their doses while maintaining control. The future of healing lies in recognizing mind and body were never separate. Rather than dismissing recoveries as just placebo, we should ask, can belief itself be therapeutic? Research spanning Parkinson's patients to mountain climbers to cancer survivors says yes. We must integrate expectation, ritual, connection, and meaning into every aspect of healthcare, not as alternative medicine, but as essential medicine. The mind isn't separate from the body. It's the most powerful medicine we possess.